A Life in Darkness and Light by Patrick McGilligan for The Defense, published by HarperCollins. Whichever side you fall on, each side of the case is treated with a lot of detail, and that will just leave, which will leave it up to the reader to make up their mind.
The book we're looking at today is a monograph on Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt by Diane Negra, with Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time and Professor Lisa Neville of Cortland University in New York State. And we will be back next week with another Film at 11.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
I'm out to sing songs. It'll prove to you that this is your world and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that'll make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Moving On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in, and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial, and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Friday, May 5th, is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. It's a day that calls for justice for those mothers, daughters, and sisters that go missing from Indigenous communities and reservations. Tune in to KBOO Friday, May 5th at 6 p.m. for special programming on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Awareness Day, produced by KBOO's Carmen Garnica.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and helping navigate the systems and services that the Joint Office of Homeless Services and its partners either have in place or are developing to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. Today's topic is using data to end homelessness. We start each episode of this podcast with a segment called Busting a Myth. Today's myth is that the Homelessness Management and Information System, known by its acronym HMIS, is a national registry of everyone experiencing homelessness in the country that is shared between cities and agencies. In fact, HMIS is a local database that's not shared beyond the local level. The information that's collected by service providers is protected information, with protections that are even more strict than protections on health information. Local agencies involved in homeless services choose the software they will use to keep track of people's progress from homelessness into services and housing. And that data, with all personal information removed, is used to make sure that we are meeting our goals of getting people housed and providing people with the needed support and services to get back on their feet after experiencing homelessness. Dr. Marisa Zapata from Portland State University's Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative explains.
HMIS, the Homelessness Management Information System, is a database. That is all it is. It is nothing more than a record about someone who is either getting or needs homeless services. That's it. Now, how we use that data is up to us, but you know, it's a by-name list of people who are qualified to meet the thresholds of homelessness and what defines homelessness, and then has key information about them, for us to be able to figure out how to best serve them or to track the services that they are receiving.
This episode focuses on one of the most important, time-consuming, and altogether under-recognized tasks of the Joint Office of Homeless Services, the collection and analysis of sets of data to help guide and prioritize the work to end homelessness. The data and evaluation team at the Joint Office engages in data collection, visualization, and analysis. This work ensures that we're setting and hitting targets to end people's homelessness for good. Because behind every data point is a human being with a story, a history, and a unique set of circumstances. Today, we feature the story of Gary, who emerged from over 20 years of homelessness by connecting with Street Roots and joining the Street Roots Ambassador Program. Gary is one of the founders of the Street Roots Mobile Journalism, or MOJO, program, which has helped in the development of this podcast.
I would probably be considered a number in that data because I was kind of lost in that data. But with my resilience, I have a lot of resilience. I don't give up because I had a trade. I had a good life at one time. I was not always homeless. So I had a good taste of life. And I know what life can give you, and I know what life you can get out of life if you put your foot forward. So that resilience came forth, and I had a good upbringing. My grandmother raised me. If it wouldn't have been for that upbringing, I probably would be lost in the data. You know, but I refuse to let myself get lost in that data today because I'm not just a number. I'm another individual that's got dreams, that's got desires, that's got ambitions just like anybody else. But I just got caught up in a broken system. Our country is not doing all it can to ensure that each American's mental health is okay. You know, that we get everything we need to get our mental health and keep it straight. Because we get more people, more mental illness than we need. And that's where the statistics are building up. That's where I see the issue at. I want to stop it through my MOJO program by taking those statistics and making them have a voice, by teaching them how to communicate again, by, through journalism, broadcasting, podcasting, videos, whatever it takes, you know. But that's what my vision is, that one day that Street Roots will get away from publishing just the paper and start putting stuff on Social Set, the podcast shows. And then that's how I met Mary Ann Funk, was with this partnership with this other program. And we were sitting there. I went to go visit Mary, and we were talking about the program. And she said, "Gary, why are you having to type any stuff out?" I said, "Because I'm dyslexic." And that was one of my big drawbacks. And it's still one of my drawbacks today. But she helped me get past that drawback, you know, by being there for me. I studied, like when I was in college, it was different, you know. And I was dyslexic in college, and I carried a pocket dictionary. Believe it or not, I have a 4.0 grade point average for 4 semesters, for 2 years. But I decided to get married, and that's why I stopped going to school. And then I ended up working in the aerospace industry for 25 years. So in tooling, I did pattern making, plaster tool making, I did jig building. Then I became a quality control manager, temporary quality control manager for a small aircraft company in Wichita, Kansas called ACI. And I got hit, like I said, I got hit in the head in 97. And I had plastic surgery, and it kept me off work like 6 months. And so when I went back to work, they fired me for absentees. It made me shell-shocked. It kept me from wanting to gain gainful employment in the aerospace industry, which I have a lot of knowledge of building planes and inspecting planes, and making parts, because I had to teach myself how to talk again. And the thinking part was really hard, you know. Being consistent with thinking of things, it was really hard to collaborate my sentences and stuff like that. So I had to retrain myself. But what really led me into homelessness was that it started off in 97. My grandmother passed. I lost my job because I got robbed on my birthday the same year. So I was really challenged with a lot of different issues. And I just kind of wandered off and I feel alone and lost because my kids don't talk to me. My ex-wife is missing. She doesn't act like she cares because she has mental issues because she's being attacked the same way I was, you know, with voices. Like, homelessness is a mental thing that gets you stuck in that rut because it becomes a vicious cycle. And then being out there, change that lifestyle is a completely different kind of lifestyle than being housed. You know, because you become more alert. It's like being in a war. You know, you don't have to be more alert. You have to be street smart. And it takes a lot more money, believe it or not, to be homeless. What I like them to know about going through homelessness, that their life doesn't have to end. Their dream does not have to stop. As long as they keep fighting and dreaming and thinking the thoughts that they need to think about more positively, that they can come from homelessness to a position in life that opens up the doors to make their life a lot better.
That was Gary, one of the founders of the Street Roots Mobile Journalism, or MOJO, program. He's a veteran who experienced homelessness and substance use disorder for decades before getting into housing and addressing his long-standing medical issues. Next, we're going to go to Beth Sandor with Community Solutions to talk about the program Built for Zero, which uses a data-driven approach to help communities end homelessness.
Built for Zero is a movement of over 100 communities across the country who are all focused on measurably reducing and ending homelessness across their communities. And in order for us to collectively or at the individual community level move from the idea of ending homelessness being just an aspirational tagline to instead being a really credible, measurable end state, we first have needed to define what success looks like. What does it mean to end homelessness? How are we collectively holding ourselves accountable for that? What will we measure? And then having real-time monthly information to help us know if all of the programs, all of the effort and investment across our community is actually adding up to fewer people experiencing homelessness this month than last month. Homelessness is an incredibly dynamic problem in communities. It's changing all the time. And to really have impact, we must have data that is as dynamic as the problem. So at a national level, we're looking at things like how many communities have quality data as a sign of are we increasing the kind of foundational components we need to really end homelessness? Looking at, is there buy-in and commitment across a community toward the shared aim of ending homelessness? Almost every community is working on addressing homelessness in some way, providing excellent programs and resources for people who enter homelessness. But the question is, have we committed to population level reductions? And is there shared commitment around that? We look at reductions. So are we seeing the needle move? Are you seeing fewer people experiencing homelessness for different populations? When you look at your veterans population or your youth or family population, across all populations, are you seeing month over month reductions? Reductions can take a long time and are a sign of the system working better. So often before we see reductions, you might be looking at other process measures around, is there better case conferencing? Have we increased housing and service resources as a way that would give you confidence that you're moving closer to reductions? We're looking at how many communities have actually ended homelessness for one or more populations. So far, across the communities that we're working with, 14 communities have ended homelessness for at least one population and then are scaling their work to others. And then probably most importantly, we're looking at, is the community sustaining that outcome over time? Ending homelessness is not a moment in time. It's a continuous state. So ending is really constantly solving. And it's something the community has to continue to measure and monitor and make sure that they're investing in maintaining an end to homelessness over time. So that is a really important piece of the long journey around ending homelessness across a community. Portland has started that process of getting to quality data and is making incredible strides on having quality data across multiple populations and sharing out to the community where we are and starting to communicate the changes that you're seeing in your numbers as a result of that improved quality data. Often at the beginning of the process of getting to quality data, many communities see an increase in their numbers, which doesn't mean there are suddenly more people experiencing homelessness. It usually means we now have a clear picture of what's happening.
This is a coordinated monthly test of the emergency alert system through broadcast stations in the greater Portland-Vancouver area, including Clackamas, Columbia, Multnomah, and Washington counties in Oregon, and Clark County in Washington. With the cooperation of public safety broadcasters and cable operators, this system informs you of events that pose an immediate threat to your life, health, or property. If this had been an actual emergency, official information would have followed the alert tone. This test was originated by Clark Regional Emergency Services Agency in Vancouver, Washington. This concludes this test message.
Portland so far has been incredibly committed to that shared aim and working together to continue to maintain that political will over time will be really, really critical. And hopefully the benefit of Portland being part of the Built for Zero network is to be able to be in conversations with other large cities who are seeing reductions at the population level and have already faced some of the early challenges I'm sure Portland will face as it's building a system that can drive reductions.
That was Beth Sandor with Community Solutions. Up next, we're going to hear from Lori Kelly, the Planning and Evaluation Program Manager at the Joint Office of Homeless Services, and the person who's leading the effort to implement Built for Zero at a local level here in the Portland area.
We do have a by-name list, and our by-name list is mostly people who are either engaging in coordinated entry, which is a way of prioritizing people for permanent supportive housing, or people who are engaging in another service, so shelter services. When they engage in that service, we put their name into our system with some other details, and we have a by-name list. We don't have a by-name list on people who are currently not engaging in our system. We don't just gather information like that. So one extra step that will move us towards what Built for Zero considers to be a quality by-name list is getting 90% or more of people who are qualifying as chronically homeless into their system, regardless of whether they are engaging in services or not. So it requires us to build a tool to collect some key information to get into our system to be able to say that we effectively know 90% of people who are chronically homeless individuals in our system. So that's effectively Built for Zero. The next part of Built for Zero, after you build this quality by-name list by their various policies and procedures, and to be clear, we have a website, and we have a link on the website to our current progress reports that at the end of each progress report has a list of all the different standards that we have to meet to be considered to be having a quality by-name list. So people can check in any time and see where we're at. So one of the interesting things about Built for Zero is that they ask you to deep dive into some policies that I think a lot of groups, including us, haven't really dove into at the level that they'd want us to. So inactivity policies are effectively when you activate and inactivate somebody in your information system and why. So you clarify, if I haven't seen them for 30 days, I will inactivate them. If they are in jail for less than 90 days, I will or will not inactivate them. So questions like that seem very wonky and detailed, but they actually help us control and understand who we're working with, how big our list is, whether we should have them there or not. And each of these policies can have an effect on how we utilize our by-name list. So for example, you might choose to inactivate people if they're spending a certain amount of time in a hospital. right? Because you know that they can't be housed during that period. Or you might choose to not inactivate them, but design some sort of inReach to keep talking with them. Either of them is valid, but has to be explicit so people don't fall through the cracks. That list is there to help us serve people. It's not there to track people. It's there to help us prioritize and engage with people and get them the best services for what they need and the best housing for what they need. And if for some reason we're perceiving that we can't do that with that individual, they were moved to the inactive list for a variety of reasons. So the policies that Built for Zero asks us to clarify and document are there to make sure that we're communicating clearly how we're doing business, for want of a better term, and how we're using our data. One thing Built for Zero does do is track how they're coming off the list. You know, is it a negative, positive exit entry? Were they housed? Did they become homeless again? Like, there are those flows. There's a second part to Built for Zero people don't talk about either. And this is the, I feel like, the heaviest lift. Getting people on a list is hard, especially when you're asking people questions about themselves without offering direct services. But the harder part is actually the thing you do with the list once you have the quality by name list. So in addition to consistently updating the list, which takes a lot of resources, and making sure it's updated, one of the things you're supposed to be doing with these lists is matching them to services. So one of the key elements of an ongoing Built for Zero framework is case conferencing or case matching with the people on the list, figuring out how to group people in a way that's effective to getting them to services. And it could be geographically, as in people are parsed out to the various agencies that work in geographic areas. It could be based on what we were talking about for culturally specific populations, which is we have all these people who are a member of the tribes, and then they are also served by an organization like NARA that specifically reaches that population. Native American Resource. So it could be something like that, or it could be something based on vulnerability, which is that we have a bunch of people in this area who have behavioral health needs, and so we need to make sure they're matched with an agency that has behavioral health capacity. So the intent of the data is not to just have the data, scrub the data, and know things. That would make it, I think, nothing more than a rapid fire point in time count, which is not what we're going for here. And it could be fundamentally pretty traumatizing to keep asking people questions without intending to do anything about it. The intent here is that you are using the data to match people to services, and that you are sourcing this information with case conferencing teams, or sometimes we call them chat teams here, that can really huddle around groups of people at a time and move them towards resources or housing, be it rapid rehousing, or be it permanent supportive housing, or be it towards whatever it is that you're perceiving they need to take their next step towards housing. So the intent is to house with this data, not just to have the data to know.
That was Lori Kelly from the Joint Office of Homeless Services. For the final word on this episode, we turn to Dr. Marisa Zapata, who is the head of the Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative at Portland State University, explaining how Portland and Multnomah County can be most effective in implementing Built for Zero.
I think it's really important to understand where Built for Zero has worked most before coming to Portland. And I mean, worked most in terms of the profile of the places that they've been in, which have been places that have had fairly limited infrastructure, data protocols, data collection, places that had not necessarily moved to doing coordinated access or coordinated entry, which is a type of what is called a by-name list, which is one of Built for Zero's big things. Also, Built for Zero has primarily worked in places where there are significant portions of people experiencing homelessness who are sheltered. So not someplace like Portland, where we have so many unsheltered people. And so I can't speak to, you know, Clackamas and Washington counties, but, you know, Multnomah County already had a number of the kind of self-assessment components for Built for Zero in place. And so I recommend the self-assessment that Multnomah County has already done, that the Joint Office posts on their website to everyone, to say, this is the checklist of what Built for Zero does do. And here is where Multnomah County and partners have self-assessed at. And what you really see, I think, is understanding that Built for Zero does not help you build housing. It does not help you deliver services. What it is doing is setting up a very coherent data collection protocol. And so that is what it's trying to do. How do you collect data effectively? How do you maintain it? How do you cross-reference it and work with it? And so there are things that that Built for Zero has in their assessment guide that I know Multnomah County has been working on, such as real careful delineation of where different outreach workers are going. I still do not understand what real-time data means in the context of Built for Zero. You know, and I think that this is where people get nervous about what kind of monitoring are we saying we're going to do through Built for Zero, because are we really going to send outreach workers out every night to find people? I'm not sure I can imagine a more inefficient and ineffective use of services, right? And so what are we actually trying to accomplish, and what kind of touches do we need, and who are the appropriate people to actually do those that work, right? And so you're into a tension right away of, if you're just trying to do basic data extraction from people for a monitoring list, that can't be your case, your outreach workers, because your outreach workers are focused first and foremost on relationship development. It also, I think, doesn't address, right, because obviously, you know, Built for Zero will be the first to say your participation has to be by choice in this system, right? And so one of the things that I hear in the public discourse is how we'll have all this information on everyone. Well, if we're actually respecting basic research ethics, no, we won't. We might have a number of people that are saying, no, I don't want to have my information in this data set, but it's not going to necessarily tell us everything. It's also a question of, and my understanding is that Multnomah County is choosing to focus on chronic homelessness in a very particular definition. So anyone who doesn't meet the standard of chronic homelessness who's living outside also won't be in the data set. So these are some of the things that I think are very confusing. I do really love what Built for Zero lays out, but again, Multnomah County was already doing a significant portion of that list. I mean, again, coordination is always important. We don't have enough housing. We do need our nonprofits to be working more efficiently and effectively. But I think there's been a lot of really great work to get there. The creation of the coordinated access list, where you're being able to see who's already lined up to get services, case conferencing across organizations. There's a program called the Mobile Permanent Supportive Housing Team that comes out of, it's managed in Join, one of the service providers here in Multnomah County. And they're doing cross-organizational work to better meet the needs of clients specifically. And so I think that it's those type of phases of innovation that I think are really important. And, you know, there's been commitments from HUD and from the Joint Office that you really need to figure out how to collaborate, particularly around racial equity. And so that's been one of our challenges, is the really stark disparity rates that we're seeing for people of color, particularly people who are Black and Indigenous. And then knowing that historically the homelessness service providers have been predominantly serving white people and founded and run by people who are white. So that's how one way we might use data to then say, okay, we actually need to figure out how to address that. Let's invest in culturally specific organizations. Let's figure out how to have homeless service providers partner with culturally specific providers.
That was Dr. Marisa Zapata, the head of the Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the City of Portland, Metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify.
We'd like you to meet a friend of ours who goes by the name of Killer Joe. Picture a so-called hippie or hip cat standing on a corner in a neatly pressed, double-breasted, form-fitting pinstripe suit, a pair of pointed-toed shoes with bold white stitches around the soles, a black shirt, long white tie, a black pencil mustache, and of course, a very wide-brimmed black felt hat. Killer Joe always has a pocket full of loot, but only the kind that jingles. You see, he likes to play the horses. He is most certainly a ladies' man. As a matter of fact, he is always willing to accept cash contributions from them for any cause, namely his own. The most important thing about Killer Joe that you have to know is that he's very much against manual labor. Killer Joe.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Today on Wings. In 1920, the international oil industry first invaded the Amazon region. That and other extractive industries constantly press forward against indigenous rights and the rights of nature. Resistance is passed from generation to generation. Stay tuned to hear women guardians speak.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.